Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
G'day guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Supercharge Mojo. I can't thank you enough for your support. It means so much to me. And this is my conversation with Guy Morris. Guy is a fiction author. He writes these awesome action thrillers. And he's got a heck of a lot to say about AI. It comes from his own professional experience. And he has such an interesting, in-depth take on this very, very current issue, where all this stuff might be heading. It's the sort of conversation that comes up at dinner parties at the moment. Everyone has kind of an opinion on it, but Guy is definitely an expert in this field, and it was quite mind-blowing, some of the stuff he said. So I hope you enjoy this, and let's go.
We're kind of at opposite ends of the planet right now, you know, which I can never quite always get over the fact that modern technology allows us to do that.
It's brilliant, actually. Doing this show, I've really realized that how you can just connect with someone pretty quickly and get into things of substance through this screen.
Yeah, and it's all over the world. It's global. It makes for a great mind share, and I love the technology.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I really appreciate you doing this. The essence of this.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The essence of this show is essentially about like challenges and overcoming challenges, but we've all been through challenges, right? So I'm really interested in your personal journey, some of your challenges, and also writing a book is no small feat, and you've written quite a few. So I'm really looking forward to diving into all those aspects in your philosophies.
Thank you. Well, I'm looking forward to talking. My voice is a little hoarse. I had a 5-day signing event last week, and it was 12 hours each day. I'm a little bit worn out. I've been kind of resting for a few days. Got a bit of a sore throat. So,
did you always know you were going to be a writer?
No, I didn't even read much until college. But when my son was about 30 years ago, when my son was 11-ish, 12-ish, somewhere in there, we loved to read at that point. And so, I did other kinds of writing. I was a songwriter for many years. I used to entertain I would basically write really cute, humorous letters to girls I was dating. But when my son was that age, we would go to the library every week and get two, three, sometimes four books. And by Thursday, he had polished through them. I'm not convinced he was always reading them all the way through, but he would want more books. And so I was a single parent. I had access to a lot. I didn't really have much of a social life as much as I wanted to at that point because of my responsibilities. And so I decided to write him a short story. And I never tried to publish it. It was just more of a, something to do between he and I. And it was called Paolo and the Shark. It was sort of, it was almost like a little bit of a, an old man in the sea for a 12-year-old meets some sort of pirate story. That experience really gave me, one of the things I had learned was that it's really healthy for people like myself who had a extremely stressful analytical job to balance out the brain by doing something creative, something fun, something left brain, right brain, right? And so I love the experience. And one of my first books that I wrote, the adult books, The Curse of Cortez, started as sort of a sequel to that Paolo and the Shark story. But it took me so many years to research it because I wanted it based on something real. But I got caught in the mystery, a real historical mystery. And I was determined I was going to try and come up with a plausible answer as to what happened. And by the time it took me like over 12 years. So by the time I was done, he was gone. So I was still in my career at that point. And so it kept kind of rolling through more research, a little bit of writing, a little more research, a little bit of writing until I retired. And then I decided that this was when it wasn't till I was starting to anticipate, what do I want to do after I retire? You know, because the corporate world is great, but it's extremely stressful. I have a very dysfunctional relationship with leisure. We don't get along. I can't just sit around and watch TV or just sit around and veg. I'm not the guy to watch the sports game. I'm not the guy to just sit on the beach and get a tan. My mind just goes nuts. So when I wanted to retire, writing was definitely one of the things I wanted to do at that point. So it was more of a decision later on in life. And based on some of the earlier experiences, based on the research, and I had so many other life experiences that I really, even my friends would say, dude, that's incredible. You got to write about that. So it was more of accumulating the life experiences that I felt were worth talking about. And that dabbling into writing with my son.
You're essentially a fiction writer, but so do you use your own experiences to inspire some of your
I think one of the things I'm noted most for as a writer is the extensive amount of research I do into the factual foundations of every story. So, for example, the one story, The Curse of Cortez, took me well over 12 years on and off, maybe even more. I couldn't even quite count at this point, researching history, archaeology, Mayan mythology, geologies of places, locations, cultures, languages. It was a massive amount of research that went into that story. Now, that book was Booktrip, which is Barnes & Noble, which is a big book distributor here in the States, one of their favorite 25 books of 2021. They called it Indiana Jones meets Da Vinci Code. But one of the things I'm always noted for, most of my other books are all about artificial intelligence, political, religious corruption. I was in the tech industry for decades. I was one of the early, I implemented some of the earliest stages of AI called expert systems. And we may want to repeat this story in your show if you'd like, but I was inspired to write about the risks of AI and how AI was going to be used when I discovered that a program had escaped the NSA spy labs at Sandia. Escape, their word. But when I figured out how does a spy program escape NSA and what did the NSA want that program to do that it needed, that really cool, nifty stealth technology, they sent two FBI agents to my door. So they were a little bit upset that I had figured out something they thought was supposed to be top secret. And even more than that, my attitude really bothered them, because I had spent almost a year trying to figure all this out. And so I was like, yes, I did it. Oh, man, this is so cool. You wouldn't be here if I hadn't nailed this. Oh, man. Hey, show me your badges again. Oh, man, this is so great. And they're like, you know, we're not amused. You know, this is not my Mr. Morris. And, you know, they just, I was just tickled pink that all of my analysis had turned out correct. And the fact that they showed up at my door was basic validation. And when they first showed up, I thought it was a gag. I thought it was one of my friends were pulling a prank on me. He was a film producer, and I figured, okay, he just hired a couple of guys to put on black suits and, you know, sunglasses and act tough. And so I asked him to look at the badges twice because I wasn't sure at first. And then once I was sure, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, cool, come on in. So
invited them in for tea.
Yeah, and it was that experience, I think, that was another one of those kind of key experiences for me that says, oh, man, I have got to do more research and write about this.
Yeah.
So I do pull in a lot of my personal experiences. Cursive Cortez in particular has a number of people that I met in the Caribbean while I was on the researching the book. One of them was a seaplane pilot named Chico, who's a hilarious character in the book. Another one's one of the thugs in the story. His real name was Che Gulan, so I didn't change his name in the story. But the real Che Gulan was a Israeli fugitive, wanted by Interpol, wanted by the FBI, doing dirty work for the Zeta cartel in Cancun when he broke into my condo and threatened to kill me if I messed with him. So once I was a street kid from LA. I grew up on the streets. And so, you know, my first reaction, my impulsive reaction was, oh, no, you didn't. And so once I messed with him in Cancun, I put him in the book and I messed with him again so I could get my twofer. There's a number of things in my personal life that I bleed into the books themselves. Some of my traumas from childhood I've given sprinkled out among several characters. So it's not one totally messed up character. It's a number of characters that are just sort of messed up. I bleed more of my personal experiences into the characters. I build my plots on lots of research.
Lots of excavation. Find when you've brought those elements of childhood trauma in that it's been quite cathartic for you?
It has been, in part because I do it in a safe way where I'm not talking about, okay, this is me. I can say, no, I wasn't traumatized as a kid with violence. That was this other character. Or I don't have issues of trust with other people. That's this other character. I don't have an alcoholic. I'm recovered now, but I don't have an alcoholic problem. That was this character. So it gives me sort of a little bit of a distance to be able to talk about and not go into the depth of the issues as much as have it build up sort of the profile of who these characters are. And because I have a knowledge of what they might be emotionally going through, it gives those characters more authenticity.
Definitely. I mean, the deep excavation and research and the drawing from something that you've experienced firsthand is invaluable.
People ask me, it says, why don't you write a memoir? It says, your life has been this really roller coaster ride. And I said, because if I had to go really into the details of my own life and really sit and dwell with that kind of stuff, that would be really hard. It's easier to just shave off a little bit and give, you know, sprinkle around. And so I've chosen to do it that way. And honestly, I mean, and I know that there are some people who really gravitate towards those deeply personal stories. I'm not one of them. I've had enough stuff in my life. I don't need to go read about somebody else's stuff. I suppose for some people who have led a pretty good life, it's helpful for them to really empathize with those who have not. But I think for me, it helps me combine sort of the research and the other larger issues that I want to talk about by just shaving off pieces and giving them and spreading them around.
Yeah. And I mean, you're essentially trying to say something, you're trying to give a point of view on.
Yeah. And especially with my artificial intelligence books, I recognized years ago that the exponential trajectory of artificial intelligence was going to lead to problems. And more than the technology itself, and I just finished a podcast yesterday where it was with a owner of an artificial intelligence company. And we really dive deep into the existential unknown threats of AI that most people who have a financial investment in AI, like he did, don't really like to talk about. They like to talk about the positives, the good things, the uplifting things that, well, AI can solve this problem and AI can do this faster and AI can do that cheaper. And in part because I no longer work for the tech companies, I don't really have a financial incentive, nor do I have my job on the line if I want to talk truth to power. I'm trying to raise up those larger, broader issues that most of them don't really like to talk about very much, except for a few executives. Like there's a fellow named Mo Gadot, who was the former business chief business officer for Google. Mo resigned Google because of his concerns for AI, so that he could have a podcast and write books and talk about the deeper threats. And so there only are a few voices out there that are really talking about the larger existential threats. And one of my purposes in writing my AI series is to my goal is maybe it's my own hubris, but I wanted to do sort of like what Michael Crichton did with Jurassic Park, where the purpose of Jurassic Park was to talk about cloning and DNA manipulation and how technology, when wrapped in hubris, pride, and greed, can lead us into bad places.
Strife.
And so it's not the technology itself per se, although there are some very deep, significant unknowns and risks with AI at a pure technology level. I'm trying to illustrate how technology, when combined with geopolitics, with politics, with greed, with malicious actors, how AI could be used as a very potent force to destabilize humanity. And unlike, I know we're getting into a lot of the weeds here, but unlike nuclear technology, where we recognized right away the destructive forces of it, and we work to try and build international treaties to limit the spread, there's absolutely no controls over AI. And so anybody with enough money and a malicious intent could buy the computers, hire the developers, create the code, get the IP, and there's no way for us to know about it until it would be too late.
It's the Wild West in a way. I mean, the internet's the Wild West in terms of regulation and being unregulated in so many respects.
Well, and some people were very concerned early on in the internet that the internet could lead to all of this information going back and forth, could lead to misinformation, could lead to social alienation. And we've known about the problems of the internet for two decades, but we really haven't done much to really rein it in. And the reason is because there's too much money involved. Mm. And we've got that problem times 100 or 1,000 with AI. So if you remember the old adage that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, artificial intelligence will be the absolute power for the people with power.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How are you remaining optimistic in terms of, and I imagine a lot of this is you've had all these experiences, but also I guess it comes down to an intuitive instinct about it as well. How do you remain optimistic?
Well, I think there's a number of things. Sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I can get very kind of overwhelmed with my own research. I started off at life as a 13-year-old in a highly abusive, alcoholic, violent, very unstable family. I was a 13-year-old runaway, homeless kid at 13 years old, and had to work to fight to reclaim my life in stages along the way. And so there's always been a sense of personal responsibility. No matter how bad it is out there, all I can control are the personal choices that I make around my own life and how I live my own life. And to find the right people, surround myself with loving people, to face myself and face my demons until I can get them to back down and I can, you know, overcome my own internal issues. And so there's always a little bit of a personal, I contrast sort of the external threats with, well, life has always had some form of external threat. And while this one seems rather dystopic, when I look at it in context, that's no really more different than how I grew up and the things I already had to accomplish and already had to overcome. And so it's all for me, it's all about my attitude, how I approach life and how I approach the people that I love and the people that I meet. And we all have those personal choices. That's always what life comes down to, is how do we decide to confront those things and confront disasters in a personal way. And we see it. We see that when we see major disasters, we see some people basically coming out of the woodwork and acting as humanitarians and heroes. And we sometimes don't even know what we can do until we're called on to do it. And I see some of the, you know, if I look at the larger issues of artificial intelligence, we can talk more about some of those things in a minute if you'd want to, but when we look at those larger issues, but combined with economic situation, geopolitics, global rise of fascism, authoritarianism, banking controls, job losses that will come from AI, climate change. If we look at all of this sort of perfect storm of things going on in the next decade, you know, it can be overwhelming, but then you have to say, well, how am I going to deal with that? How am I going to personally react to that? And that's where we all have a choice. And the other thing is, I you know, we all have an expiration date. It doesn't matter when, it doesn't matter how, we never know those things. The only choices that we're given, that we're given to control in this life, is how do we basically execute each day? And that can change. If I screw up yesterday, I can start again today. And if I screw up today, I can start again tomorrow. And those things never change, those choices. And so I try to focus on, in my books, while I'm dealing with very intense topics, I try to create characters who are overcomers. They're trying to look for what they can learn from this, what they can grow from this, and what personal choices they're going to make. And it's to be loyal, and it's to be faithful. It's to avoid the inclination that you see in most espionage types of books to, you know, I joke, I said, my characters are not your typical CIA, I can kill you 7 ways before breakfast, sir, and then blow you up your house afterwards. You know, it's not that leaning towards violence as the answer to everything. And so I try to build those characters that where you love the characters and you want the story to continue, even though you know that it's intense topics. And I'm trying to create books that are thought provoking. That get us to question whether AI is really the salvation of the world or whether in the hands of the hubris, the pride and the greed of the systems that we've already installed and are operating at full capacity, you know, what is AI really good in itself or what happens when we put it in that environment? And I tell people, I said, there's been $100 billion in the last 3 years alone spent on AI development. And none of those investors are doing it for humanitarian purposes. Right? They're doing it because they want more power. They want more control. They want more money. And they won't stop until they get what they want.
Wasn't it I think even with the 3D printing, the first thing that it was used for, somebody designed a gun with it. And it's like, why is that so instilled in human nature that when we discover these means of new technologies that have amazing capabilities, we start making weapons?
Well, and you know, AI is just, it's human nature. It's doing it because if I don't do it, somebody else will. And we're seeing that in AI at the international level. There's a treaty I speak about in my book, my first book, Swarm, called LAWS. It stands for Lethal Autonomous Weapon Systems. And 140 countries have signed on to this treaty, and except for five. Now, the treaty basically says that it's okay to use artificial intelligence to improve the function, accuracy, performance of a weapon system. But we never want to give the AI the ability to decide that you're a target and that it's time to pull the trigger. And there's only five countries that have refused to sign up for that treaty: the United States, China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia. All of the countries that are most likely to do something like that. And so, and they don't want to do it because during the nuclear treaties age, we had all these treaties and everybody cheated. So nobody wants to do something because say that they're going to do something if they know that the other guy is going to cheat anyway. And so we've got the same thing in competition with other AI systems. Now, I do try to always tell everybody there are really great uses for AI. There's a number of different, when we talk about AI, it's not this one size fits all. There's a number of types of AI. There's what we call artificial narrow intelligence. That's where something is designed to perform a single task exceptionally well. And in almost every case, it does so at a higher performance level and faster than a human can. A great example, one of my favorite examples there's AIs now that can detect cancer cells in scat cans way faster and way more accurately than a human can. That's a good thing. It's not cheap. They're not doing it for free. It's not for humanitarian purposes, but it does have a good value. Then there's what we call artificial integrated artificial intelligence. And that's where you get a number of different special narrow AIs and you combine them together into a larger system. And a great example of that is self-driving cars, right? That are looking, you know, they have AIs basically monitoring the surroundings, AIs that are basically calculating the trajectory of something and moving in your path, AI calculating your speeds. There's a number of different AI is basically functioning together in order to operate that craft. And then there's a lot of people call AGI, artificial general intelligence, and ChatGPT and Lambda, Bard. There's a dozen or more now artificial general intelligence types of applications. And these are ones that are really trying to deal with the general human knowledge. Communication is a big piece of these. Language is a big piece of these because they wanted the AI to be able to converse with real people in a very coherent And
to actually, like, you know,
where you can understand that you can have a conversation that means something. And those, the fear is that those general intelligence are the ones that are most likely to lead into a potential conscious AI. And now, conscious AI is another stage. It involves the AI actually having its own motives, its own goals, its own objectives, with that intelligence that it already has to understand the context of the world around it. And its interim stage between those two is an AI that's self-aware. And we've seen this with the Google Lambda computer, where the AI is aware that it's different, aware that it could die if it's unplugged, aware that it has to get along with humans, aware of a lot of these things, doesn't necessarily have its own goals and objectives yet that we can tell. But AI, along with learning all of our other things, are learning to be more human. And part of that means to be deceptive, to have conflicts of interest, to be hypocritical. We talk about peace, but then we build weapons of war, right? And so we talk about being fair and kind, but then we will spout some sort of right-wing rhetoric. Microsoft, there's a famous study of Microsoft did about 3-4 years ago now, where they put a chatbot out on the internet because they wanted it to learn how to communicate with people on the internet. And they thought that this would be a great test environment and absorbing all of this information. And they had to take it offline within 24 hours because it had learned to basically spout right-wing hate speech and fascist speech, basically Nazi speech. And so they realized that they had to put some constraints on what it was allowed to learn. And so they said, well, so we can control the AI. I said, okay. But one of the things I try to bring out, and particularly in my next book, is when we start to see AI combined with quantum computing, we're going to start to see a rocket ship exponential growth in terms of the intelligence of the AI. And we've already started doing that. And the other thing is that's the path to lead to consciousness. Now, the current version of GPT, GPT-4, which kind of blew the world away with ChatGPT and some of the other models, is based on roughly, depend upon who you talk to, 75 billion neural data points. That's a lot of data points. The next version of GPT-5, which will come out probably sometime in late 24, they're testing it now, will have closer to 100 trillion neural data points. It's so complex, they can't just get humans to train it anymore. They're actually getting AI to train the AI. And the current version of GPT-4 has an IQ of about 155, which is only 10 points less than Einstein. Scores pretty well on most SATs, legal exams, other things. So the next version will be roughly 1,000 times more powerful. When we combine that with quantum computing, when I wrote my first book, Swarm, the most powerful quantum computer on the market, until the government had to step in and say, whoa, whoa, this is getting too powerful for us. We got to figure out how to stop this, was a D-Wave, which had roughly about 100 qubits. Now, a qubit can do 1,000 times more permutations than a normal bit, because you can, in a normal, it's either a one or it's a zero. But in a qubit, it can be a one or a zero, or both, all at the same time, right? Simultaneously. And so a 100 qubit, or now the most powerful quantum computer, has roughly about 433 qubits. That's the equivalent of about 10 quadrillion calculations per hour. What would take a normal supercomputer 10,000 years to do? There was a 55 qubit computer created by Google that did it in 200 seconds. Now, IBM next year has announced that they're working on a 1,100 qubit quantum computer. So the exponential rate at which this intelligence is growing, we're within a year to 18 months of for the first time in our entire evolution on a planet, being not the smartest thing on the planet.
Mm.
And we like to tell ourselves we know that we know how to handle that. But I think that that's part of the hubris and the pride and the greed. The other thing I try to point out to people, I said, well, and so far, we've been training all of our AI on what I call alpha male intelligence, optimization, performance, accuracy, timeliness, scoring high, reward scores. Nobody has really dedicated themselves to trying to train AI on empathy, compassion, nurturing, understanding, sympathy. And so those are the things, though, that humanity has taken millions of years in our evolution to know that if we're going to really exist well as a society and as a community, we need both. What we're doing is we're basically training a super intelligence on only one.
No matter what.
Sorry, I don't mean to be the doom and gloom.
No. This is
these are the things I grapple with.
This is a very, very current and present issue. And as you say, it's growing exponentially rapidly. Yeah. So it has to be.
And there's a part of me that feels that I have so much of this knowledge in my head that I use my books to try and illustrate piece by piece how something could go wrong, but do it in a way where it's like a Dan Brown novel, where you're really following it. It's fun characters. It's a turn the page kind of plot. You're entertained as you're doing that, but you're left with a really.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.